Well, good morning. It's great to see all of you here this morning. A special welcome to those of you, as Jeremy mentioned, that are visiting with us this morning. We're glad to have you here. As Jeremy said a few minutes ago, my name is Greg. You might be able to tell I'm not originally from here, but from the U.S., where I've been for the last couple of weeks, last two Sundays, in fact. And so it's great to be back here and to be back with you all after quite a bit of travel and speaking that I had the opportunity to do over the last several weeks, and we'll talk a little bit more about that as the message goes on this morning. I want us to think about this idea of teaching and being taught. One of the questions that Jeremy asked of Guy and Fiona as he was baptizing their beautiful little girl, do you promise to teach her and to raise her up in the Lord? And so I want us to think about that this morning in particular. If you've from Deuteronomy chapter 6, if you've got a Bible and you might have, if you've closed it up, you can feel free to turn back there. I saw this picture that's up here in front of us a couple of months ago now. It's of Prince William and Prince George. And the caption of this was, "Melting Hearts at Aston Villa." They were, Prince William is, if you are familiar, he's a huge Villa fan. And so he has now taken his oldest son, Prince George. And so maybe you've seen this picture, maybe you saw the video clip of it, where George just goes berserk when Villa scores a goal. And he's just shaking his fist and standing up and just going crazy. And as I saw that video clip and as I saw this picture, I wondered to myself, like, why in the world is he an Aston Villa fan? I have nothing against Villa. Like, I don't know Aston Villa. I don't know where it is. I'm sure I've watched them, but I don't have a clue. So it's not that. It's, why of all the teams in the world, why of all the teams in, let's just call it Greater London, would he be a fan of Aston Villa? Did young Prince George, who's, I don't know, what is he, 5, 6, 7 years old now, did he go through the Premier League charts and go, oh, that look there at the top? No, that probably wasn't it. Did he go through all the players and say, you know, this is my favorite player or this? Or probably not. Why is he a huge Aston Villa fan? Because his dad is. Because his dad is a huge fan. And as we think about that, think about what happens typically in life. Maybe you've experienced that. Maybe you've experienced that same thing in your life where somebody that raised you, a mom or your dad or a care or a grandparent, some adult in your life had such a huge impact on you that you began to love what they love. The college American football team that I root for, it was where my dad went to school. I love it because he loved it. Maybe you have a similar thing. Your football team, your whatever it is, it doesn't have to be a sport. It can be something that you're passionate about. It can be a hobby that you love. It can be just something that you do. It could be that you love to read, or you love to cycle, or you love to do whatever it is. Maybe it's because somebody older than you that loved you, that cared for you, had that same passion. We pass those things down naturally to the next generation. And what God says to us here in this passage in Deuteronomy chapter 6 is that we are, as the older generation, to pass those things on about God and be just as passionate about Him as we are a lot of the other things that we are in life, and maybe even more so. And so this morning, just for the few minutes that we have left, I want us to think about what is it that we are to pass on? What is it as parents, carers, as grandparents, as those who are older, what do we give to the next generation that's coming after us? What does God instruct us? And there's just a couple of things that I want to draw out of this passage. It's not all that you can say. It's not all that we are to teach, especially if we were to broaden it. And even in this book that we've read, in this book of Deuteronomy, God has just given the Ten Commandments to his people. So he doesn't really even get into that at this point, or what comes next in chapter. Just to focus just a little bit. And here's what I think he says. Teach them these things. Teach them, first of all, that there is a God. Look at verse 4. Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God. The Lord is one. Teach them that there is a God, and that there is one God. If you're not familiar with the Bible history, that's okay. I'll give you a brief, like 30-second glimpse of Bible history as to where we are in the story of the Bible. And God has called, he has made a people. It's called the nation of Israel. He said, these are my people. And they've grown up in slavery, actually, in the land of Egypt with the pharaohs and the pyramids and all that. And God brought them out of that slavery, and now they're wandering around the desert. They're wandering around the Sinai Peninsula on their way into what is now modern day Israel, what then was going to be Israel. And he's given them these laws, and he has said, here's what I want you to teach. Teach the next generation that there is a God and that God is one. Because the land that they've come out of, the land that they're wandering around, there are lots of gods. When they were in Egypt, they were there for hundreds of years. There's lots of gods. The people in Egypt, they worshiped the sun, they worshiped the moon, they worshiped the stars, they made other little things out of wood. They would carve them, and they would carve rocks, and they'd say, here's another god. They would actually worship Pharaoh. Pharaoh was seen as a god. And so they worshiped him as the ruler. And so there's lots of gods. And those gods were powerless. They could pray to the sun, but the sun just shines. It doesn't have any power other than that. The moon shines because it reflects the sun, and it doesn't have any power other than that. They would pray to the rocks and stuff that they had carved, but they didn't have any power. They can't speak. They didn't do anything. They're false gods. And so God says, the true God, the God of Israel, the God that brought these people out, says, teach them this, that those things, those people, the celestial beings, those aren't gods. I'm God. And there is one true God. And teach them that this God is there and that he is real. And we might live in a day and age, actually, where the opposite might be true. Where over 50% of the people in Scotland don't believe there's a God at all. And so he says, teach. Teach your children that there is this God. That he is real. That he exists. That he is powerful. That this God created everything that you see. And he simply did it by speaking. Has anybody ever spoken anything into being? We can't do that. I can't say, let there be a bicycle. And a bicycle just appear. Well, I can't do that. God has the power to do that. And he said, let there be earth. Let there be oceans. Let there be land. Let there be the sun and the moon and the stars. Let there be the planets. And God rules and reigns over all of that. And he is so other than what we are. Like, I cannot comprehend that God can hear my voice right now. He knows what you're thinking. And it's not just limited to this room. That God knows the person who is in the Amazon rainforest right now and is just beginning to wake up. And he knows what they're thinking. And the businessman in Tokyo that's making his way to the office on Monday morning, he knows him. And he knows the people on the sled dogs in the Yukon Territory of Northern Canada. And he knows what they're thinking. It's so far outside of what we can even comprehend. And he says, teach that. Teach who this God is. That he's real. that He's the Creator, that He knows us, that He is completely other than who we are. He is powerful, He is majestic, He is glorious. And do you know why He created us? He created us to worship Him. In all of His splendor, in all of His glory, in all of His power, in all of His might, He said, I'm going to create a being that's in my image that's going to reflect me, and I'm going to do that so that they would worship me. I mean, if I was going to create something, I'd probably create it for my own glory because I'm selfish, but that's not who God is. God does it for His own glory, for His own name to be magnified. And so He says, teach that. Teach who I am. Teach that there is a God, that there is one God, that He knows us. And then He says in verse 5, love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your strength. When we see who God is, He says, teach the next generation who I am. And then teach them to love me with all our heart, soul, and strength. And we don't have the time this morning to kind of go into each one of those areas. But I'll just say this about what God is calling us to when He says our heart, soul, and strength. It's our whole self. In that day and age, they kind of had people divided into sort of like these three categories: heart, soul, and strength. It's all of us. Jesus is going to be asked when He comes and He walks on the earth. Someone goes up to Him and asks Him, what's the greatest commandment? And Jesus is actually going to quote this verse, but He's going to add one more thing to it. Jesus is going to say, love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength. And He says mind because the Greeks had developed this idea of the mind that we have. And so Jesus adds that into it. Not that this changes at all, but He's saying the same thing. Love God with everything that you are, with your heart, with your emotions, with your mind, with your thought, with your soul, with what you long for, with what you put into yourself, what goes out of yourself, and with your strength, with what you do. Love God with your heart, with your soul, and with your strength. And so we ought to teach our children that we are to love Him because He has created us to do that. But here's the question. Are we any good at that? Have any of us done that perfectly? I would ask, was it Rob or Oliver that raised their hand? Yeah, I have. We might want to say, yeah, I've done that perfectly. I've been great. But the truth is, none of us have. None of us have loved God perfectly. We might want to think that we have. We might want to believe that we have. But the truth is, we haven't. We haven't loved God the way He has called us to love Him. And that problem that we have that Jeremy was mentioning earlier during the baptism, that problem that we have is called sin. You see, God created us to worship Him, and yet what we did was we rejected God. We rebelled against Him. You say, you know what I'm going to worship? I'm going to worship anything other than the true God. And so we run after all these other things, trying to worship them, trying to find something that fills us, trying to find something that satisfies us. And all the while, those things just leave us empty. And so there's a problem. But God has a solution to that problem. And so as we teach the next generation, as we teach one another that there is a God, that we are to love Him, and we realize, wait a second, I don't. We teach them this as well. Teach them that we receive what we did not earn. Go down to verse 10. It might seem a little strange at first when we read this. When the Lord your God brings you into the land he swore to your fathers, remember they're out wandering in the desert, and he's saying you're going to go into this land that I promised your fathers that I would give you to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. That's the folks that kind of started the family. A land with large, flourishing cities you did not build. Houses filled with all kinds of good things that you did not provide, wells you did not dig, and vineyards and olive groves you did not plant. Then when you eat and are satisfied, be careful that you do not forget the Lord, who brought you out of Egypt, out of the land of slavery. What's the solution? The solution to the fact that God made us, that we rejected him, that we don't love him as we should, that God has given us what we did not earn. The people are out wandering in a desert. They've been slaves for generations. And God says, I want you to realize this. You're going into a land full of houses. You didn't build them. And you're going to walk in and you're going to see the beds are made. And you're going to go, this is my house because God has provided it. He gets rid of all the people that were there. And you're going to go in and there's going to be fruit on the trees. And there's going to be a well there that you didn't have to dig. And there's going to be water. And you're going to be able to just kind of walk in and say, this is home. And you're going to sit on the back deck and you're going to eat grapes. And the sun is going to be shining. And you're going to go, I'm home now. And why did that happen? Because God provided it for you. God has provided for this nation a place to live, a place to call home. And it points us forward to God's ultimate provision for us, and that's a man named Jesus. God provided what we need in a man named Jesus, because as we realize that there is a God, as we teach that to our children, as we teach that to ourselves, would we realize as we teach our children that we don't love God as we should, but we also teach them that God has provided a way for us to be made right again, to be brought into relationship with God, and that is through Jesus. And that's something that we did not earn. It's something that we don't go to God and say, God, here's 100 pounds. Will you love me? Will you accept me? No, it's not our money. It's not our CV. It's not what we do. It's not how great a family you have. It's not how what education you have. There is nothing that you can offer to God that God says, I will accept that so you can be brought back into relationship with me. The only thing that there is Jesus. Because Jesus lived that perfect life of love God with his heart, soul, and strength. Jesus fulfilled that for us. And yet he died to take the punishment that we deserve, that I deserve, that you deserve. Jesus took that punishment on a cross where he was killed, where the wrath of God was poured out. But he rose from the dead. He rose from the dead. He conquered the grave. Holy God in love became a man to bear our blame. On the cross he took our sins, and by his death we live again. We receive what we did not earn. We get God's righteousness. We get his perfection. His otherness somehow covers over us, so that now when he sees you and me, if we believe in Jesus, then we're forgiven. Let me illustrate it just another way. This past 2 weeks ago, I was in the States, as I mentioned. And I was at a church that had people that work in different countries all over the world. Several from the UK, Romania, Russia, the Southeast Asia, South America, North America. And we just shared with this church. It's a ginormous church. It's kind of gross. Oops, I shouldn't say that. They're wonderful people. But it's huge. There's more offering plates in the church than there are people here this morning. So just to give you, it's massive. It's a wonderful place. So one of the things that they did is they said, in order to coax us to go and speak to the wee ones, to the children, because if you get the chance, you know, speak to adults or high school students, like, yeah, pick, that's me. And they're like, we need people to speak to the the six-year-olds. I'm like, not a spiritual gift that I have. So they said, if you do that, we have a cake baking competition. And I'm like, that's cool. Like, I don't care. Like, cake baking competition, that's great. But lo and behold, they, unbeknownst to me, they said, you can bake a cake for any country that's represented here. So this young man named Ben, wearing the Indiana shirt, he baked a cake. He spent 6 hours baking this cake, decorating it all by hand. The sheep that are there are handmade, all covered in coconut. And the one sheep that's turned over is the sheep without a shepherd, to represent the people in Scotland that don't know Jesus yet. And there's much more to the cake. And so the Wednesday night was the last dinner, was the cake baking thing. And so I had these people from the church like came running up to me and was like, "Greg, Greg, have you seen your cake?" I'm like, they didn't bake me a cake. Didn't talk to the kids. Have a kid phobia. Like, that's just my thing. They're like, no, they baked a cake for you and you've got to see it. I'm like, okay, whatever. So I go in and I'm like, it was amazing. And so they had this contest. And they stood up and they said, here's the winner. Ben, who made the Scotland cake? And everybody claps. And they're like, you know what? As a winner, Greg gets $500. And I went, yeah! Ben became my best friend. I didn't do anything. I just showed up. Ben did all the work. Ben went and bought the stuff. He spent 6 hours making it. He spent lots of time and love making these cool little sheeps and doing all the, is it piping or whatever the icing is and all that stuff. It was just awesome. He did everything. I got $500. God did everything that was required for you and for me to be saved when he sent his son. We offer nothing, but we get riches. We get the riches of Jesus. We get these wells that you did not dig. You get water from them that will satisfy you forever. And so he says to you and to me, teach these things. Teach these things to your children. In verse 7, impress them on your children. Talk about them when you sit at home, when you walk along the road, when you lie down, when you get up. Tie them as symbols on your hand. Bind them on your foreheads. Write them on the door frames of your houses and your gates. As parents, if you're here and you believe in Jesus, these are encouragements to us. Talk about Jesus when you're driving home today. Talk about them when you have dinner together. Talk about them when you walk to the bus stop, when you go to school, when your kids come home from school. Talk about these things. Talk about what you have been given in Jesus. Put posters on the wall. That's what it means when he's saying, write them on the door frames of your house. When you walk in the house, be reminded of Jesus. Teach these things. Have such a passion for what God has done that you impress them on your children. Is it foolproof? Does it mean our kids will turn out perfect and all these things? No, unfortunately not. But it's what we're called to do. To teach the next generation. And it doesn't matter if you have children or not. If you're older, we're supposed to teach those that are younger. And there's no age qualification on that, but we share that good news with those that are coming after us. As I wrap up this morning, I just want to just ask. Maybe this is the first time you've ever heard anything like this. Maybe it's the first time you've ever heard that God is real, that God loves us, that God died for us. It's something that you might have questions about. We'd love to answer them. Nothing would give us more delight than to just sit down with you at some time in the next weeks just to answer those questions that you might have. Or the people that you came with this morning would love to answer those questions that you might have. But how can you know? How can you know what the end holds? When death comes, which comes for us all, what happens? The only way to be sure is to believe in Jesus. What do we have to do to be saved? Is to believe that what He did was for you and for me. Was for you. Confess your sin. Say, God, I don't even know what that means, but I know I haven't loved you. Will you forgive me? Will you forgive me because of Jesus? And believe in Him. And He will make the way clear. You don't have to leave here this morning wondering, you know, what happens when I die? What happens if coronavirus strikes? Because God has said you can be assured of this, that if you confess your sins, God is faithful and just, and He forgives you by Jesus. And if you believe that, teach it. Be passionate about it so that the next generation would know that too. Let me pray for us.